Welcome again to Cottage Talk. I am Russ Goldman, and co-hosting with me today will be Mike Gregg and Emilio Danello. This is another episode of the FFC Weekly Roundup, and in this episode, we're going to be previewing the upcoming match for Fulham against Newcastle United. However, we're going to start by looking back at that dramatic 1-1 draw for Fulham against Leeds United at Craven Cottage Tuesday night. Both of my hosts were there, and we're going to be going through it shortly. Before we do anything, though, I have to welcome them both back to the show. First, Emilio, how you doing?
Hi there, Russ. Hi there, Mike. Still recovering. Maybe I'm still recovering after that famous last second equaliser. It felt like winning a cup final, really. But yeah, I've still got a little bit under the weather the last couple of days. But yeah, still haven't gotten over that moment. It'd be good just to reflect on that crucial point that could actually be a life-changing point at the end of the season, and obviously reflect on our opportunities against Newcastle tomorrow. So yeah, looking forward to joining the show. So apologies to all the listeners if I'm standing a little bit under the weather tonight.
Not a problem there, Emilio. Mike, welcome back to the show. How are you doing?
Yeah, hi, Russ. Hi, Emilio. Yeah, doing well. End of a busy week. But yeah, as Emilio says, recovering a little bit from Tuesday. I think a little bit of an anticlimax after that last-minute goal. But yeah, looking forward to talking about that and potential game, difficult game tomorrow. And you know, let's see if we can continue this really good run we're on.
All right, before we get into this, I want to go right back to you. And please share with everyone the latest video that has been uploaded on Fulham Supporters Trust. You know, I'm actually putting them on the Cottage Talk Facebook page and tweeting them out. You guys are doing a great job with them. So talk about the latest video.
Oh, thanks for that, Russ. Wasn't expecting that at all. Yeah, well, I mean, as listeners know, part of the Supporters Trust, and one of the projects we're working on is collecting historical voices of Fulham fans. So we're just, you know, my old man who's retired now and's a Fulham fan since the mid-60s is visiting people of the same vintage, shall we say, and he's just letting them talk about, you know, being a Fulham fan. And we've done a couple, Dennis Fenton and Bill Shripton, and then the one this week we did was with Bob Hughes and Barry Crump. And I think anyone who's watched all three can pick up snippets of history about not only about football at Fulham, but also the area and watching football in the 50s and 60s. You know, I've certainly learned quite a bit from it. And yeah, I mean, we're getting good viewing figures on them, and it's a project I hope that we can expand in other areas. And my dad's done his fourth video today, and that should be up sometime next week. So I'd also say to any listeners, if you're interested in getting involved, then to contact myself, and you know, we can see what we can do going forward.
They're great, Mike, and I just fortunate that I get a chance to watch them. I'm glad that you guys are doing them, and I look forward to many more of them. It's teaching me a little bit about the history, and I'm thoroughly enjoying them. All right, guys, let's now talk about the match on Tuesday night. Like I mentioned, very dramatic. So, Emilio, I'm going to start with you just to get your overall thoughts on what you watched and the dramatic ending, of course.
Yeah, it's one of those games where, you know, we dominated. Let's be very frank. We did dominate the game. The first 15, 20 minutes overall wasn't particularly pretty. It was quite tight. You know, neither team able to grab the upper hand. Obviously, the suicidal own goal there was just something I don't really want to reflect on, to be honest. I know we'll talk about it more in a moment, but
we will be.
You know, it's yeah, other than that, I thought it was quite a cagey opening. Both teams cancelling each other out. Didn't look like there was going to be many goals, and Leeds defended quite well. But suddenly, around midway through that first half, we started getting the upper hand, and we started to play very good football. We sort of upped the pace, a lot more good movement. But again, all credit to Leeds United. I think I know we had a lot of possession. We dominated. But at the end of the day, let's give Leeds credit. I think I said that the other night. That
they defended very well.
They came with a game plan, and they almost succeeded in nicking all 3 points. But overall, it was, you know, a good professional performance from our boys. I think we persevered. This team doesn't give up. That's very apparent this season. I think that's the difference between this season and previous seasons. We fight to the last seconds, and you know, we continue going. I think the sending off at the end actually potentially made the difference for us.
Interesting.
I think Tom Kearney a bit more space to get onto his left side and actually and hit the screamer into the top corner. But, you know, I've reflected with a few people around whether that sending off didn't take place, would he have had as much space? I mean, therefore, would we have scored accordingly? So I think that might have been the turning point of the game. I know we're going to potentially talk about that later. But overall, we were dominant. We fully deserved the draw. And in another night, we would have won more handsomely. But it's one of those games where we felt it just wasn't going to run for us. Balls trickling in the six-yard box, no one to bury it. Goalkeeper making the save from Syriac. Two Stefan Johansson free kicks. One tipped over, one went over. Was it just going to be one of those nights? I think most people resigned that was going to be the case. But thankfully, we got a last-second equaliser. And it felt like we won the FA Cup final, even though we never actually won the Cup final. That's how it felt like. And I can't remember the last time I celebrated like that. I think it's probably Aston Villa away when Rodrigo scored a late winner. That's probably one of
the. That was wonderful too, yeah.
Yeah, so again, we've not had much to cheer about the last few seasons, but maybe this will lift us into tomorrow's game and still gives us that opportunity to keep pushing on and keep believing. So overall, good performance, good defending from Leeds United, and they're there for a reason. And that's what makes the point even more precious, in my opinion. But it was good entertainment, great crowd for a Tuesday night, and hopefully we can carry on that momentum tomorrow against Newcastle.
Okay, Mike, over to you. I want to get your just overall thoughts on this match. I'm glad that Emilio brought up the performance of Leeds United. I actually heard Gary Monk after the match, and they had a game plan, and they really went after it in a certain way, and they executed their game plan. But in the end, Fulham found a way to get something out of it. So I just want to get your overall thoughts on this 1-1 draw.
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously relieved we got the goal at the end, and, you know, it would have been a travesty if we'd come away from that game with nothing at all. We were by far the better team, and, you know, I've come away again looking at a team in the top six position thinking, you know, why the bloody hell aren't we in, you know, top three, really, when you look at these teams. Leeds, yes, they're solid, and they defended really well as a unit.
They did.
I mean, there's a great photograph of, you know, Cabano having a shot and three of their guys trying to block it. And, you know, and they were doing that a lot of the game. And, you know, they nullified, there's some comments on this, whether they nullified Martin or Martin didn't turn up. But, you know, they did. We played through him quite a bit. And, you know, he didn't have much luck. And their centre backs were probably the best pairing I've seen against us this season, that's for sure. So, yeah, Monk definitely had them organised. And it's unfortunate the own goal at the beginning, because the first 15 minutes we really weren't at the races at all. We were, you know, very disjointed. And I think the crowd and the players were both nervous and that to start with, and that goal just made it even worse. But really, it was like the clock striking, 15 minutes gone, and then suddenly we stepped up the gear. And I did some stats, and, you know, 65-70% of the game was played in their half for the rest of it. So a deserved point. We should have had three. You know, the goal that wasn't scored, the great save from the header. But then there's also, you know, Leeds hit the post at 1-0 as well. So
they did.
You know, it was a game that had a lot going. It was a good football game. It was a great, entertaining night under the lights at the Cottage. But I do feel if we'd been able to get a goal earlier, you know, even 10 minutes left, then I think we would have won the game. But, it is the last time I celebrated like that. Yeah, Villa was similar, but it would have to be the Hamburg game when Gier was scoring. I think that's the last time I went mental and standing on the seats and the Johnny Haynes stand in the first row of the upper bit, there's a wall and you can stand on that, and I was on top of that as well. So yeah, all went a bit mental at the end of the game.
That's great, Mike. Thanks for sharing that. All right, before we go through some of the moments of this match, I'll go right back to you, Mike. I want to get your thoughts on the starting 11 and also the starting 11 for Leeds United, because they were missing two key players. So what was going through your mind when you saw both starting 11s in this match?
Well, yeah, leading up to kickoff, there was all the talk about whether Woodward would be playing for Leeds. And so, you know, that was good news not to see him. And then for us, we've got such a settled side. The question mark really at the moment is just over who's going to play at left back, and he went for Malone this time, and you know, nothing. It was pretty. Yeah, that was the 11 we all expected, really, and so there was no real shocks. I'm still a bit disappointed by the bench. I mean, you look at the squad. Okay, it is a bit light, but really, do you need potentially four defenders on the bench? You know.
I agree,
George
Mike.
George Williams is in fine form. Adrian has been the 19th player in the squads when they've been travelling. You know, just something different. You know, I know Sessegnon can play on the wing and that kind of thing, but yeah, I just feel it's a bit overload. When you look at it, the four defenders, Parker and Syriac, it just doesn't give you many options to change. So the substitutes, again, they pretty much pick themselves. You're not going to see anything dramatic change. So, but yeah, no, the team lineups were fine, and it was good news that they were missing a couple of key players.
No, I'm there with you. I'm glad that you brought up the bench, Mike, because it's something that was on my mind when I looked at it as well. If he wanted to change things up, they were very limited there. Emilio, I want to get your thoughts on that, because it's something that I was thinking about at the time, and also just overall your thoughts on the starting 11 and the two players that were missing out for Leeds United at the time.
Yeah, I think, you know, Mike said a couple of the things I wanted to cover off. I think Malone started to go off form recently, and I'm not going to pick on him because I think up to around January time, you know, he was a very important player for us, scoring some good goals. His crossing has been abysmal the last couple of months. Let's be very frank. He's been in the fact that he's still getting some game time, I'm surprised. I think maybe there's an opportunity now for Sessegnon maybe to start more regularly. He's proved that he's able to play at this level, and he did make a difference when he came on the hour. But Malone's going through a bit of a rough patch at the moment, so maybe that's my only surprise. Maybe I would have persevered and put Sessegnon on there, but equally, Malone's physically stronger, and Leeds are quite a strong physical team, and that tactically might be the reason why Sessegnon only came from the bench on the Tuesday night. The bench, I agree with Mike, you know, not much inspiration there. And funnily enough, it's, you know, this is where you start to get injuries, you start to get suspensions, you loan all your sort of second 11 players out to other teams. You know, you've got very limited options on the bench. And, you know, why isn't George Williams getting some game time opportunity?
That's a great point.
Aite's injured, so surely the next choice in line would be George Williams. He's
absolutely.
He scored, what, 13 goals in about 11, 12 games at the next level down? So if that's not good enough to merit a place in the starting line or as a substitute, as a minimum, then, you know, surely his days are numbered at the club, or he needs to go on loan and play more regularly at another club. So that was a key indicator. This was an opportunity for George to come and play for the first 11, play as a substitute, wasn't even given that opportunity. So that obviously tells you something that maybe he doesn't figure in Jokanović's long-term plans, which is disappointing because we haven't really seen the best of him. You know, there's a lot of potential. A couple of seasons ago, he got the bad injury. He's gone loaned on a couple of clubs. And, you know, this is a young, promising talent who, again, we may end up losing because he doesn't necessarily fit in our system. So overall, Fulham lineup, no surprises. Obviously, I had one of my work colleagues sitting with me as a Leeds supporter fan. He was quite disappointed about the negativity of Gary Monk's selection. You know, put aside the Woods injury that he wasn't playing. But Steve made a point before the game that we shouldn't read too much into that. We're all thinking Wood not playing, that's a positive for Fulham, but then there's more of the unknowns that we don't know how to deal with. So disappointing, you know, if you're a Leeds supporter, but my friend was saying this, the lineup for Leeds was very negative, and he was very disappointed overall with Gary Monk's negative attitude and negative tactics. So, and that's just seeing it from a different perspective, but we got the point. We deserve to get the point, but it's I think I was quite surprised that Gary Monk left, you know, made a few substitutes, you know, different players, changing different players and dropping. I think he dropped three players on the bench. So many Leeds fans will be surprised by that selection. But overall, we benefited from that. We got the point. But, you know, what more can we do, really?
All right. Let's now get into the first half. And we're going to do things a little bit different. I'm just going to go to what I'm calling turning points, key moments in both halves. And we're just going to talk about them. Mike, I'm going to start with you. We've already been talking a little bit about the own goal by Tim Ream. This started from a free kick, and then he just sliced it in the back of the net. Let's talk about this. And listen, it's a horrible situation. You said the team looked nervous to begin with, and this was just the wrong way to start the match.
Well, yeah, I mean, I remember the first 5 minutes we hardly got involved, and then, you know, there's this, I think it was a free kick, and it's sort of pumped forward, goes over the top, and I think, I mean, maybe Emilio saw it a bit better because I think he sits down towards that end of the ground more, but it looked to me as if he wasn't quite sure if Button was going to come for it or not. He's with his man and he outstretches his leg and it slices into the goal. And, you know, you could see Button, he's sort of stranded. It's unfortunate. Of course, it's happened to Tim Ream, but I think credit also looking forward. You know, Ream, he has made a couple of mistakes recently, and, you know, he is possibly that, you know, a mistake in every game is due. But, you know, he gets on with it and I thought he played really well the other night after that. But it was a turning point in the fact that, you know, you're 5 minutes in, you're already nervous. The Leeds fans were very noisy and vocal, and it took us another 10 minutes, you know, until a quarter of an hour on the clock before we started to be able to string, you know, two or three passes together. I mean, in front of me, I remember McDonald putting a ball straight out of play when he should have been an easy pass to Malone. So I think it just, you're geared up in any game. Any game where you concede an early goal, all your planning's gone out the window. And with this goal, plus added that we'd started nervously, yeah, it was a very, very poor start. And you feared the worst. But like I say, we started turning it around on the quarter of an hour.
Okay, Emilio, over to you. Definitely want to get your view. Mike thinks that you had a better view of this. And also, his feeling that we started nervous and this just added to it, and it took a while for us to get in gear. So let's talk about your view of the own goal.
Yeah, it's literally directly in front of me, and I didn't hear any call from Button. Button was, to be honest, in no man's land. There was no need for him to go there. I thought Ream, my instant reaction when I saw the incident was that Ream had the defender under control, had the opposing striker under control. I thought from my initial reaction, he was actually trying to back pass it or flick it over to Button so he could then clear the ball. That was what I thought in his mind Reeb was trying to do, but, you know, Button was in the middle of nowhere. I didn't hear any shout, no call, nothing. So, you know, I know Reeb made a mistake against Cardiff a couple of weeks ago, but to be honest, he's probably our most improved and consistent player since the turn of the year. And I've been giving him a lot of attention, a lot of focus, and calling him out quite a lot in a positive way. You know, he looks a lot more assured on the ball, more confident, and I think he's actually outshining Callas, and that's saying something. Callas made a few, you know, bad decisions in the first half on Tuesday night. He gave the ball away carelessly. He did that against Preston North End as well on Saturday. And, you know, I can be a little bit critical of Callas, not because I want to be, but it's, if anyone's going to get a hard time, it'll usually be Ream. Anyone will find an excuse to give Ream a hard time. But credit where it's due, he's been our most consistent defender in the last 2 months. You know, controversial or not, but it'll be interesting what Mike thinks about that. But overall, I thought, you know, Button was in the middle of nowhere. No need to have gone for that ball. I didn't hear any call. And Ream, I thought, well, last thing would have expected it was Button to be completely away from the goal line. So poor defending. But to Mike's point, even those first 5 minutes, we just couldn't string two passes together. Disjointed, giving cheap balls away. I know the pass he was referring to about McDonald, just, you know, simple ball, we went out of touch. And it took a good 15 minutes thereafter just to put our foot on the ball, get a bit of confidence. And then suddenly things just suddenly started to click. It seems like a light was switched on and suddenly the players woke up and here we go, start the game again and start to play our fluent football. And for the last 70 minutes of the game, it was only one team in it, but Leeds defended well. And that's why we only managed to score a late equaliser. But I was disappointed with Button, but I'm going to give him some credit later on because I think he made a crucial save to keep the score down at 1-0, which you could argue that could have been a turning point because if Leeds scored that, game over.
He did, and we'll definitely talk about that. All right, Mike, I want to go back to you. Let's talk about the situation that everyone will be talking about or has been talking about, obviously, with goal line technology. Let's put that aside. Let's just talk about the opportunity. And before that, I believe that there was a good opportunity by Tom Kearney as well. Like you said, we were starting to really get into the match from the 24th minute. You have this strike. And I've watched it several times now, and it's obviously over. But let's talk about this, because this to me more shows about the ability of Cabano. He's a real player. And let's just talk about that. It's a turning point because it's not our goal. But it also, for me, it's a positive because you could see what Cabanos can potentially offer us in the future.
Well, Cabano, he's been a different player. He's been, since coming back from the African Nations Cup, and we've all moaned about not enough signings in January, but he's almost been like a new signing.
Like a new signing.
He was with us. Yeah, I mean, he was with us, but what did he really contribute apart from a decent performance on his debut? He's hardly done anything. But then he's come back, and he's like he's got new Duracell batteries in his legs, and suddenly he's got pace, he's got skill, and he likes a shot, and he certainly knows how to hit one. And and that probably culminated on Tuesday with where he made himself space, got the shot in, and from the angle I was sat at and the height I'm at, yes, it was a hard shot. It bounced down and bounced back. I couldn't say to you, if I'm really honest, I could not say whether I knew whether it was a goal or not. It was a really difficult one. But, I look at the reaction of players, and the reaction of Martin was to turn around immediately and, go goal. And right. A couple of the Leeds players as well, seemed to react in a way that they felt it had gone in as well. So very disappointing. But the other thing I noticed from where I sit on the opposite side, the ball's hit the bar, bounced down, come out, and I'm looking and the linesman is still running to get to the line. Now, bear in mind, if you look at the replay where the players are, the last players are about 8 yards out, about 10 yards in the box. There's no way he should be having to run back the way he did. And, there's no excuse for the linesman at all on that one. Even if he was a 3 or 4 yards out, he should have been able to, we've all seen the replays, he should have been able to see that that was in. I have a bit more sympathy with the ref, which I know is quite difficult given some of the stuff he did. But again, if you look at the replay, he's at ground level, he's 30 yards out, fairly central, lots of players between him and the goal. And so he cannot give that goal if he can't see that it's gone over. And I know everyone in retrospect is saying, oh yeah, I could see it from the Hammersmith end and it's obvious where it was. But I'm sorry, we've all sort of played sports, and if you're 30 yards out, you can't always see where the ball is on the other way, over a line or whatever. So you've got to go with what the linesman says or technology says. And unfortunately, the linesman made an error on this occasion.
Okay, thanks for sharing that, Mike. And, listen, we could all complain about goal line technology. Of course we can, but it doesn't change the result. That's what I keep coming to. They had opportunities still to get all 3 points, and they didn't do enough. It's a situation. It is what it is, and we can complain. Yes, it should have been a goal, but it isn't, and you just got to find a way to get all 3 points. We do get a point, and it's unfortunate. All right, Emilio, I want to go back to you because you've already talked a little bit about Button. There was an opportunity for him to make a nice save in the first half, so talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, I just think I just want to add on that point around the goal line technology, and I think it's one of those things. I'm always one of these these fans who believe some things go for you, sometimes they don't. They typically should even themselves out over the course of a season. And there's this ongoing debate currently in the UK around video evidence be put into place, into which division for what type of scenarios, and just to make the game flow better, but give the benefit of the doubt to teams that don't get the decision. So, do you do it for when it's offside debate, a penalty debate? Where do you draw the line? So I think goal line technology will be introduced into the Championship. I think that's something that I think the FAL are sort of trying to encourage. But the other thing is, where do you draw the line with all these debatable decisions? So you have to draw the line at some point. But, some you win, some you lose. And I think that's my perspective. But I think the key thing from that first half is, and probably throughout the whole game, we didn't test Rob Green enough. My Leeds friend works with me.
I agree with you.
He said to me a number of occasions, why aren't we shooting from distance? Why aren't we trying to, play high balls in the air? Test the goalkeeper a bit more, because he could do the very spectacular, but also is prone to making a few errors. And I think overall, over 90 minutes, I don't think he had to work hard enough. Other than the Syriac save and the tip over the Bobby Hansen, I can't think of any worthwhile saves he made over that 90 minutes. So that was disappointing. You know, there was an opportunity to test a Gipo, can be a little bit dodgy at times, but we didn't really test him enough. And maybe that's the reason why we didn't win the game. So,
okay. All right, guys, let's now go to the second half. And Mike, I want to go to you because you were actually tweeting this out. I'm calling this a turning point because I think it is bringing on Sessegnon for Scott Malone. And I believe, let me just double check here, the 60th minute. Let's talk about this because you were noticing, and I noticed it when I watched the match as well. I see this as a turning point. Bring him on. Your thoughts?
Yeah, well, I mean, I have the, as I sit side on, I had the privilege of Malone in front of me in the first half. And, Emilio said his crossing was appalling the other night. And the thing about Malone is that, my view is if he doesn't have to think about it, then he puts in a decent cross. So if a ball comes to him, as long as he doesn't take a touch, then if he hits it first time, he's going to deliver, you know, a decent ball enough times. As soon as he takes a touch or has to think about anything, he just can't do it. And we all know he's played really, really well, you know, first half of the season, you know, maybe even a bit longer than that. And he's been head and shoulders above the player who he replaced, who will be nameless, but we all know who that is. But, you know, so he's done really well considering the bad reviews he had from Cardiff fans. But I do wonder, and I did tweet something the other day about it, I just wonder whether we've seen the best of him. And his form has, as Emilio said, gone down a little bit recently. And his performances are below the standard that he set, certainly up until early January. So, yeah, I said, you know, Sessegnon was coming on. I said, yeah, unsurprising. But I also spoke to you off air, didn't I, Russ? And I tried to explain to you, because I played fullback. And I think the problem is his positioning, his body positioning for Malone is when he gets the ball, he's not in a position to look forward and take the ball forward. He's too square on. Hence, he gets it from McDonald, for example, and then has to either give it back to McDonald or give it back to Ream. Whereas Sessegnon, as soon as he came on the other night, you could see he's turned almost like 45 degrees.
And he's off to the races.
And he's looking to go forward. Yeah. Yep. So, I mean, it's, you know, maybe it's a lack of confidence that, you know, Malone's lost a bit of confidence recently. I don't know. But, you know, one of his aspects that we're all keen on is that he was able to get forward and get a cross in, and he's not doing that. And if he's not doing it, is he doing enough at left back to warrant, you know, keeping Sessegnon out? I still think they're going to alternate, but I'm looking at, I do the man in the match stuff, as everyone knows, and I have a spreadsheet, and I can see all the teams picked in a sort of graph going forward. And Sessegnon's edging it recently, you know, I mean, he started, four of the last seven. So, you know, he's slowly taking over from Malone. So I think we're going to see him play a lot more now. And going back to Tim Ream, if I can just mention.
Yep. Go ahead.
Since Boxing Day, he's been ever present. And, you know, while Callis has been injured, you know, the other two guys have come in a little bit here and there. But the one constant in the team has been Ream. So, and he has improved a hell of a lot.
He has, Mike. And I was going to get to this later, but since we're talking about Tim Ream, I think he made a very key situation when they could have gone up 2-1 at the very end of the match, and he got in the way of the player when they were 2-1. Talk about that, because again, I think we're seeing more of that from Tim Ream.
Well, the thing about Ream is he does remind me so much of another American player, and I've mentioned it before, and that's Bocanegra. You know, he is very good on the ball, and he has got a very good tackle, and he makes the tackle and keeps the ball as well, which is really good. And the kind of possession football we have, he made two or three key tackles throughout the whole game. And I remember the one you're talking about. And, you know, we end up launching an attack from it as well. So
that's
he has.
Right.
He's he's winning people over. Some of his ardent critics on Friends of Fulham, for example, are now beginning to see what he can offer. There's still that doubt in the back of their mind. And I suppose it's in, after everything that happened last year, we all have that.
Right.
It doesn't help if you score an own goal in the first 5 minutes. But the fact is, the other, you know, the rest of the next 85 minutes of his performance was excellent. So he's a fixture of the team. He is one of the starting 11. And people who are not keen on him are just going to have to lump it, I think, at the moment.
Just wanted to bring up the situation with Tim Ream, the key tackle, because we're just talking about him. Obviously, that's a little bit later, but you know, I thought that this was the time to really talk about it. All right, Emilio, I want to go back to you. Let's talk about the other two substitutions. I'm curious if you feel that these are turning points when Savisa brought on Scott Parker for Kevin McDonald, and also brought on Cyriac for Chris Martin. Do you see these as turning points, as offering us something else? And obviously you have the leadership with Scott Parker.
Disappointing, I think, with those two substitutes. I think one thing about the Malone situation, I think just covered where two contrasting, same issues, but contrasting in terms of outcomes between Sessegnon and Malone. What I'm trying to say here is in the first half, there was a couple of instances, I think it was from a corner, from a free kick, Malone found himself on the right, trying to some sort of tactic from a set piece. Didn't work out. Malone was completely out of position. Leeds broke on the attack. Malone nowhere to be seen. But I remember there was one incident in the second. I was about within 5-10 minutes of Sessegnon coming on. He was on the right hand side, right in front of me, and the ball was going out of play for a Leeds goal kick. But he fought and fought and fought. Actually, got the ball away from the Leeds defender. Got into the penalty area, and unfortunately the pass wasn't the best. But two contrasting situations, same flanks, but Malone completely out of position and struggling to get back into his normal custom position. Whereas Sessegnon, wrong side of the pitch, fought and won the ball out run. He had no right to win that ball. I don't know if you remember that, Mike, but that was right in front of me. But the Malone incident was opposite where you sit, and he was in no man's land at that point because the set piece didn't result in anything favourable for us. So that was just something about Malone. Again, another instance where he seemed a little bit all over the place on Tuesday night, out of position on many occasions. His passing, like I said, was appalling. But so yeah, that's something else I just want to add there, specifically around Malone and Sessegnon.
Sure.
But to the other point, I think me and Steve Lydia, we both made an observation. I would have been bolder. I actually would have taken, we were both saying, take a Luka off, who I thought was ineffective, and put on Cyriac with Martin. Try something a little bit different. Play it long ball. You know, get Martin more in the game. I just thought we could have been a little bit more adventurous with those substitutions rather than just do a light-for-light substitution, Cyriac for Martin. That was disappointing. Luka wasn't in the game, wasn't getting any space, and we've said it time and time again, if he gets marshalled out of the game, his offering is quite limited at times, and it was the right time for him to come off and maybe try that something a little bit more positive and adventurous, and that was maybe a little bit disappointing that Jokanović didn't do that. I think McDonald got more into the game, but he was on a yellow card, looking a little bit tired. I think it was probably a safe pair of hands there, just being Parker, straight swap. So substitutions could have been a little bit more adventurous, try something a little bit different. You know, we saw that, you know, we weren't getting the rub of the green throughout that second half, and maybe we should have just made it a little bit more ugly, like put Matt Smith in, you know, with another forward. Why didn't we put Cyriac in place with Martin up there? That might have made a bit of a difference. We could have roughed it up a bit, but as we've seen, maybe at times we don't have that plan B, and it was a like-for-like set of substitution, which was somewhat disappointing.
Okay, Emilio, I'm going to go right back to you. We've already talked about this earlier. Leeds hit the post. Let's talk about this, because they don't hit the post, we obviously lose this match. Talk about this, and because that is a turning point.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, my initial reaction from the other side of the pitch was that actually Button made the save, but, you know, it's only when I saw that actually hit the post. And to be honest, we'd be disappointed if we didn't score from that opportunity. That, you know, there was a great opportunity for Leeds United. They caught us on the break as we were trying to push for an equaliser. And, you know, another night, we did ride our luck a little bit then, and that could have been a turning point, like you've said. But, it's, you know, they had the opportunity. If Wood was there in that position, you'd argue that would have been 2-0, game over. So we rode our luck. And, you know, thankfully they missed a great opportunity because it's, you know, you should be hitting the target and actually making the keeper make a save from that position. But they were wasteful and they paid the price for that in the end. But that was their only really clear-cut chance of the game. And that's, you know, that's the key thing. But, you know, to my point, we rode our luck there. We didn't ride our luck with the ball that went over the line from Cabana. So some you win, some you lose, you know. So things even themselves out. I'm a pragmatist when it comes to that.
Yeah. Very interesting there. All right, Mike, over to you. Let's now go over to the, obviously, late in the match. Emilio already talked about this, that maybe this was a factor in the tying goal because Calvin Phillips gets sent off in the 89th minute on a bad challenge on Scott Parker. Talk about that. Do you agree with Emilio that maybe this was a real turning point because maybe it gave space later for Tom Kearney?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, he was in that middle part and there is a hole there when you see, you know, Kearney take the shot. But, yeah, I mean, Parker's substitution, you know, that's what he brings you, which we don't have with the free in midfield. He does bring you someone who's going to make those tackles, get in people's faces, upset them. You know, you can see him when he's on the pitch. He's, you know, he's at the ref, he's at other players and, you know, maybe he said something to him, that's why he gets the tackle on him and, you know, he probably deserved to go off as well, in my eyes, for that tackle, you know, for the second yellow. And, I think it, you know, probably does lead to kind of a situation where there's suddenly a hole. I mean, I went to a football stats event last night and they showed a very good diagram of how players are connected within a game, and actually it was an actual game, and it was transposed into like a top-down computer graphic, and how all the players were connected, and you take a player out and how that connection collapses, and you know, that's partly what happened on Tuesday night. There was no one there in that area, so you know, he took advantage with a great shot, didn't he? But the sending off, yeah, that it gave us that little bit more space because, you know, like I said earlier, you know, for the last 15 minutes of the game, you know, 70% of that game was played in their half and probably in their third as well. And they had every player in the last 30 yards of the pitch almost all the time. So, you know, just that one little bit of space gives Kearney the chance. I mean, Emilio's talking about disappointed with the subs and why don't we go to, you know, a plan B. And I sort of agree as well. You know, I mean, I don't think we've seen Martin and Cyriac on the pitch at the same time. I'd be quite interested to see what they can do. But we are playing the way we play, which is keep the ball, slide rule passes. We're looking constantly, you know, trying to find a way to break these teams down, and the option of putting two men up top and going wide and going long sometimes is just not there. We're just not going to play that way, and you know, it's, I wouldn't say it's frustrating, but you know, it's something a manager you would have thought would have in his back pocket to use, but it just seems that he doesn't want to do that because, you know, there's other things. You know, what do you do with Kearney? Do you put him wide? Do you leave him in the middle? So yeah, I mean, there's for me, I would have liked to have probably seen Fredericks push up, and I agree with Aluko. I thought he was quite ineffective, but you know, it's the way he wants to play, and it is giving us the rewards at the moment. And the biggest the player who's getting the most rewards out of it is Kearney. That's clear, you know, from his. He had a bit of a quiet period maybe in January, but suddenly the last few games he has stepped it up, and you know, with the armband, with the goals and the man of the match performances, he's shown every penny of that 25 million we keep saying we want for him.
Okay. All right. It's time to now get to the end of this match. And before we talk about the goal by Tom Kearney, we have to talk about the header by Cyriac. Definitely great header. I'm fortunate it was saved by Rob Green, but only a few minutes later. You have the goal by Tom Kearney. And Emilio, I'll give you the honors here. Just share with me what was going through your mind when you saw the goal. And then we have to talk about the celebration, him running into the crowd with the supporters and other players going in with him. That was pretty amazing. Tell me the last time you've seen a situation like that at Craven Cottage.
Incredible, incredible scenes. And, you know, what we were talking about before we do that, we're also talking about Tim Ream. It was that challenge we were just talking about a few moments ago, that where, you know, we thought maybe the one-on-one, he could lose possession here, Leeds would go on the count and then score. The way he fought and battled for that ball, we subsequently scored from that attack. And, you know, again, you know, Tim Ream was outstanding in defence second half, absolutely outstanding, a powerhouse. And he had a lot of confidence in you know, progressing up the pitch. There was some sort of, I wouldn't say Chris Coleman-like in terms of confidence carrying a ball forward, but there are times when, you know, he'd actually have the, you know, he'd get the ball, do the simple things, but move positively forwards. Earlier in the season, when he was having the odd game in and out, it was sideways, backwards. But now, no, he's only looking one way, and that's forward. And the way he fought for that ball and was determined to win it, a minute or two later, we scored a goal off the back of that. So big congratulations there for Tim Ream. But that's, you know, that, you know, it was, we were all resigned to the fact that we weren't going to get an equaliser. We tried and tried. The ball wasn't running. Green did make that good save from Syriac, but it just wasn't going to be. And it was really just determination, really. I think that got the better, you know, made us realise, you know, just keep going up to the whistle, keep believing. And it was a good interchange of passing there with Parker. And wasn't it? Kearney was right in front of me. And we were just saying, hold on, he's literally got an opportunity. He's got space. He's going on his left. It was just felt, you felt like we could instinctively see what it was going to do. It was very predictable from where I sit. That was he only had one thing in his mind. And lo and behold, you saw the goal, you saw the celebrations, and wow, never seen anything like it from many a season. Maybe to Mike's point, it probably is the last time, it's probably Hamburg at home that we celebrated to that effect at Craven Cottage. And it was just amazing scenes. And I understand, obviously, Kearney played as a youngster for Leeds United, so maybe there was some history there. And I think there was a lot of abuse from what I gather as well. There's a lot of verbals going on behind the scenes, you know, on the pitch between the fans and the players. So maybe this was his way of actually getting off his chest and getting it all out. And literally, his celebration to the crowd, you can see how much it meant for the team and for himself and the whole club. It could turn out to be a very crucial point, like I said at the beginning of the show. And, you know, this division is very fine margins. Last season, you saw Brighton missing out on automatic promotion by goal difference. It could be exactly the same this season. With the third best goal difference in the division, how crucial would that Tom Kearney goal be in 2 months' time? You know, only time will tell. But you just felt that, you know, it was just relief, sheer relief there. And the way he just celebrated, just literally, that's how much it meant to the team and to the club. You know, it was these guys aren't giving up yet. There's still 2 months worth of games, and I smell something in their blood to say that, hold on, we're sniffing up behind Sheffield Wednesday and possibly Reading, and this sixth place is up there for grabs. And they're believing they're going to fight right to the death. Believe you me, from what I saw on Tuesday.
Well, that's what was important for me, guys, is to see the fight, and it was definitely there all the way to the end. I'm glad that you brought that up, Emilio. Mike, back over to you, because I want to talk about this as we end discussing this match. Obviously, we're talking about the Tom Kearney goal. I think something that hasn't been talked about enough, and that's why I want to talk about it right now, is Aluko. Now, we could talk about Aluko overall in the match, but Aluko actually drew two players to him. If they're not fearful of him, then maybe it doesn't leave the space open. We're talking about the other reason, because they're down to 10 men. But also, I think the fear of Aluko also opened up the space as well. Talk about that, because if they're not as fearful for Aluko, maybe Kearney isn't as open as he was.
Then that goes back to what we were talking about, about them being a man down. So, you know, they doubled up on it. You know, we were saying Aluko didn't perform well, but that's because they doubled up quite a bit on him as well at times. So, you know, those two players did their job. They went with the wide man, but there was no one in the gap. So, but that's what you're seeing from, hopefully. I mean, I don't watch all the 90 minutes, you know, apart from the away games, really. But, you know, when you're watching the game with the full view, you know, not just the TV camera, then you can see that the off you know, off the ball running that a number of the players are making, trying to go in space. I mean, some of the triangles we do with the ball, but then also the movement of some of the players, you can see that's all coming from the training ground. And so, and it's also the intelligence of the players. There's plenty of players who have all the skill in the world, but have no intelligence and don't know when to draw their players away. And, you know, Luko, he's a very experienced player and he knows what's required. And, you know, making space for not only yourself, but for other players is key. Yeah. To play in football, and not enough players are good at it. But I think Luko showed, you know, he is good at that. And we have some other players in that team who are very good at it. So, and especially the way we play, it's all about movement. Movement of the ball, but then also the players moving into space to receive it, and then also making space for people to go into it. I think Johansson is excellent at it. When he is on the ball, when he knows, when he's having a good game, he will find space like no other player I've seen in recent years.
Okay, great job of breaking down this match, guys. And just for time's sake, we're not going to go through the full-time stats. I just want to go to man of the match and then also rating of Slavica. So, Emilio, to you first. Who was your man of the match? And also give a rating for Slavica in this match.
I might be surprised at this. I'm going to give it to Tim Ream. I know I've been going on about him quite a bit on this show tonight, but I wouldn't say he should be entirely at fault for that own goal. You know, at the end of the day, I thought he did well enough to keep, you know, the opposing striker at bay. And, you know, there's just a miscommunication, but he will be remembered for that own goal. But for the other 85 minutes, and Mike's made it a point a couple of times this show, he was outstanding. Callas was careless a few times in that game, more than often, and he was careless against Preston as well. And I love Callas. I hope we sign him next season. But the focus is all about Callas, but not about Ream. And the way he sort of started to show an air of confidence, carrying the ball forward, good vision, always looking over his shoulders. And I tend to like look at people's body language, like Mike says. When you see the whole length of the pitch, you get to see people's vision, the shouts, the movement, the touches. And Ream, you know, was outstanding that second half. You know, he nullified every break from Leeds United, was instrumental in the lead up to our goal. And, you know, he didn't really put a foot wrong for 85 minutes. And I think, to be honest, I'm going to give him our man of the match, because all the other more attacking, you know, offensive players all tried. But him and Tom Kenyon, my standout players throughout that game. But Johansson, good flicks, good touches. But, you know, maybe could have done better with his two free kicks. You know, Martin, you know, did well, but, you know, not really in the game as much. Fredericks, I think you made a point, Mike. I don't think he ventured forward enough on Tuesday night. So there were some solid performance, average performances, but Ream, I thought, you know, I'm going to give him man of the match. And as far as Vukanović is concerned, I think no surprises with the lineup, really. Maybe a disappointment we didn't really start assessing on, as we discussed. And maybe a slightly negative with the substitution. You're a goal down, try something a little bit different. So I'm going to give him 7 out of 10, but he didn't do much wrong, but, you know, maybe there was an opportunity just to change something a little bit different, be a little bit unpredictable, and try, you know, everything we tried and everything we threw at Leeds just wasn't falling for us. So it's in those moments that you have to try something a little bit different. And maybe we should have been a little bit more bold. And we've said that a few times this season. So 7 out of 10 for me.
Okay, thank you there, Emilio. Mike, over to you. Want your man of the match, also a rating for Slavica, and feel free to share the results of your poll as well.
Thanks. Yeah, no, I hadn't considered Ream to be man of the match, but I take everything on board that Emilio said. And actually, if you look at the average positions, it was almost, our formation was almost 2-1-7. So Ream and Callas were, you know, were holding a fort. And certainly Ream, for me, was a better player out of the two. But, you know, Kearney won the man of the match, both on the Fulham website and the match ratings that I do. But for me, actually, I thought it was Cabano. I thought he was...
I thought it was great.
You know, very dangerous all game. And, you know, Kenny gets the equalising goal and the glory and all the photos. But for me, it was Cabano. I thought he had his best game since joining us. I'll just make a comment about Kenny. I love a celebration, but watch the celebration again. And he almost goes arse over tit over the bloody advertising board. And last thing you need is a silly injury. So celebrate, but be sensible. Try and be sensible if you score a last-minute equaliser again, mate.
Okay. How about Slavica here?
Yeah, I agree. I'd give him 7. The team's pretty much picking itself. I would have maybe brought Session on at half time. And the bench. I'd just like to see another midfielder. You know, just another midfield option. That's all.
Okay. Great review of this match, guys. Thank you for doing this with me. It was very interesting getting your take on what you saw. You guys are both there. All right, it's time to preview the upcoming match against Newcastle United at St. James's Park. Before I do that, I want to mention I was actually a guest on a podcast, a True Faith and UFC podcast, so check that out. I gave a prediction. I'll share my prediction at the end of our show, but I had to give him a prediction. It was very interesting. He also had another Fulham supporter on there. And it was very interesting because his view was that Fulham, in his opinion, should come and try to frustrate us, not really play. And I told him that I thought Fulham were going to come and attack, and he was surprised by that. So that was very interesting in this podcast that I did. So please feel free to check it out. I put it on the Cottage Talk Facebook page if you want to listen to it. All right, guys, let's now get into the preview. We'll start with some information from whoscored.com. And, Mike, I'll go to you first on this part. Let's start with some characteristics of Newcastle United, according to whoscored.com. Strengths, there are a good amount of them. Let's start with very strong finishing scoring chances, shooting from direct free kicks, creating long shot opportunities, creating chances using through balls. All very strong. They are also strong at creating scoring chances, attacking down the wings, attacking set pieces, aerial duels, in defending set pieces. They only have one weakness, according to WhoScored.com, that's avoiding individual errors. And their style, possession football, play with width, attacking down the right, short passes, attempt through balls often, playing in their own half, rotate their first 11. DeAndre Yedlin, this is from Team News with them, will miss because of a thigh injury, and they also have a couple of other injuries as well. And it also says striker Dwight Gale and midfielder Mo Diama may be recalled after both were substitutions at Reading. So those are players to look out for. And also midfielder Isaac Hayden and winger Rolando Ahrens are ruled out. Then they also mentioned, and I do want to mention this as well, Lucas Piazon, as we know, is going to be out for Fulham. And I believe Slavica mentioned that the Florida Ite will be missing as well. So that's unfortunate. So that's some information with you, Mike, from WhoScored.com. Just give me your overall thoughts on that and also your thoughts going into this match with Newcastle United.
Well, I think what you see from that are two teams that are playing very similar styles. Newcastle certainly have that edge in quality, especially in the striking department. And it's interesting what you say about having had a conversation on another podcast. Yeah, you're right. You know, Fulham are not going to sit back. We don't
no.
sit back. And,
you know, was surprised by that, Mike. He was actually surprised.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's when you watch your own team, you're going to know more about what they do. And the worry is that the only team we played recently who come against us and took us on were Tottenham. And we saw what they did. And okay, it's a different level and a different quality. But when it's going to be interesting because we just cannot sit back. We are just not that team. And
it's not in their DNA, Mike.
So, no. So, I mean, we'll talk about scores later, but I'm potentially tomorrow seeing quite a high-scoring game, especially if Gale plays. And I know the first game we had was only 1-0. But, you know, we're both going to be trying to do it. We could nullify each other, of course. You know, we're both trying to do exactly the same thing. But, you know, and Newcastle's record at home isn't that great.
No, it's not.
And, you know, for a team that's top of the table. So, yeah, I mean, it's the weaknesses. I mean, they've only got one weakness. I think they're, you know, they have a bit more than that. But, yeah, I mean, it's real. I'm so disappointed. I can't make the game tomorrow because it's gonna be intriguing. Yeah, they are obviously the favourites, and if we can get anything from it, will be great. But I could do with a couple of their players being injured. You know, it's disappointing that Gale was on the bench the other day and looks like he's going to start tomorrow. And they're strong. You know, when you look at their things, you know. they're strong in the aerial duels, defending set pieces.
Yeah.
Well, we're not really pushing the ball in, are we? We're not throwing it in, so that doesn't really matter. They're creating scoring chances, but we're defending well, and we control the game in the opposition's half. You know, they play possession football. It really is. You know, it's a mirror image of each other.
It should be an open game, Mike.
You would think so. And the question therein, and I'll be interested in from your view and Emilio's, you know, is an open game better for us? Is it, you know, will it come down to who can create the most chances and take them?
It's a great discussion because I'm not sure, because on the face of it, I would say an open game favors us. But this is a team that pretty much, like you said, wants an open game too. Emilio, what are your thoughts about that? Because this could be a very open game.
Yeah, Devin, certainly all the stats, you know, the goals scored and, you know, the amount of games they've gone unbeaten. You know, it has the makings of being like a 4-3 victory for one of both teams. No,
it
wouldn't surprise me. It'd end up as a 0-0 draw at the end of the day. But it's, you know, it's certainly got the makings that both teams will be trying to play a similar brand of football. They have obviously got better quality plays. That's very obvious. But you know, it might hit the very important point. Their home record isn't the best. I think you know they've lost, I think, 4 home games this season. Admittedly, they haven't lost in about 10-12 games, so they're in a good run of form, as are we. So it's hence a breeze. It could be a boring 0-0 1-1 draw, which will suit us. Let's be honest. We can get anything out of the game. That's an extra bonus as well. But you know, Dwight Gayle. You know, they've got some players who, you know, if we were more adventurous potentially as a club, or you know, we had the opportunity to sign Dwight Gayle, but he obviously chose to go to Newcastle United. Mo Diarmi was another player that we were linked with last summer, who I thought would have been an excellent acquisition for the club, again opting to go for a more high profile club. So there's a few players in their team that, you know, wouldn't have disgraced themselves in a Fulham shirt and probably could have potentially made that little bit of a difference to us. But the difference in Newcastle is then they've lost as many games as Fulham, but they've won the games that we've been drawing, hence the reason why they have a good 15, 20 points ahead of us. So I'm looking forward to the game. You know, I remember many, many interesting victories up there. 4-1 back in 1982. I think you were there, Mike, as well, St. James's Park. I remember, under Chris Cole, we won 4-1 there one Sunday afternoon as well. And our goalkeeper made a string of saves. So, you know, we've gone there and won a number of occasions, but it's, you know, it's the pressure's got to be on Newcastle, not on Fulham. I think we can go there and relax, play our normal brand of football, and, you know, hopefully give them a run for their money. But, you know, it's certainly doable to get more than a point there tomorrow. If we have the fighting spirit that we showed against Leeds United on Tuesday, then, you know, who's to say that we can't go there and win the game? But it'll be an open game, but it's, you know, let's just keep Dwight Gayle under control. He's the one I'm worried about because he's overcome his hamstring injury, and he's a clinical striker at this level, something that we don't necessarily have. And if we make half a mistake, he's going to bury that chance, and that's my worry. We've been conceding goals in recent games, not many goals, but we are prone to making a mistake. And if you're going to get quality forwards, you know, in the opposing half, you know, he's not going to give those opportunities away. He'll bury them. So we could potentially get thrashed if we make a handful of mistakes and, you know, and they capitalise. Alternatively, it could be a very close fought game. So it should be a very open game, exciting. But you know, let's see. You know, I'm interested in what Mike was saying. It's we try to play like we did against Tottenham, and Tottenham were a better version of us. Look what happened there. So we just remember where we've come from, and you know, let's not be too despondent if we don't get the result that we're hoping for tomorrow. It's one step forward. That's what we need to think about. Just keep
I agree
pushing.
With that.
You know, let's not overreact, listeners around the world, if we don't get the result that we all expect. That's my little whinge for the night.
Well, very good there, my friend. All right, I just want to mention, and then I'm going to go right back to Mike. Dwight Gayle is their leading goal scorer with 21. Matt Ritchie is at 9, and Jose Perez is at 6. They have danger places, everyone. Everywhere we could talk about Mo Diarmi. I already mentioned Ritchie. Jonjo Shelvey is a key player for them as well. But Mike, you know, just to paint the picture a little bit about how similar the teams could be, I'm going to share some stats from WhoScored.com to see how we match up with Newcastle United. Most of these are offensive stats, but let's start here with possession in the league. Fulham are first at 59%. Newcastle are fourth at 52.6%. Shots per game, Fulham are first at 16.1. Newcastle are third at 14.8. Player ratings, just their overall player ratings. Fulham are fourth with 6.87. Newcastle United are second at 6.96. Passing success, Fulham are first at 83.3. Newcastle United are fifth at 77.1. Crosses per game, Fulham are first at 24. And Newcastle United are tied for fourth at 21. Long balls, not good for either team. Fulham are last at 65, and Newcastle United are tied for 14th at 79. Short passes, key stat. Fulham are first in the league with 515, and Newcastle United are fifth at 378. Okay, Mike, I want to go to you. Does this really just paint the picture of teams that are similar in their offensive styles and really could just go back and forth? And does this really show you that this really could be an open game?
Well, yeah, I mean, this review reminds me a little bit of the Reading one we did, Russ. Remember when we said, oh, it could be 0-0?
I remember, that's right.
And then we went and stuffed them. I think our best chance tomorrow, and we lead everything in possession, don't we? I mean, this
we do. Here.
Possession, pass success, you know, it all points in one direction. It would be lovely tomorrow if we can be in that kind of, you know, 60% mark, you know, push Newcastle down to 40 at home and keep the ball and sort of dictate the game, you know, because Newcastle, although they're top, their fans expect so much. And I always find Benitez can be a bit flaky as well if things are not going right, and he can make a few mistakes. So for me, the two danger men for me at Newcastle, as Amelia says, is Gale and Richie.
Totally.
You know, Shelby, I'm not too fussed about at all, to be honest. But
okay.
You know, yeah, even if we have the ball 70% and Gale's still on the pitch, I'm still going to be worried because his burst of pace, you know, against any of our guys, we're in problems, especially if we play too high a line. But Our best thing tomorrow will be to use what we're good at, which is possession, keeping the ball, pass success, and getting shots on goal, getting shots in at least. You know, we moan about not scoring enough, but we do score a lot, and we have a lot of shots as well. So we need to try and keep that going as well tomorrow.
Okay, Mike, very good there. All right, over to you, Emilio. Who are your key players for Fulham? Who has to really play excellent for Fulham to get a result, dare I say, all 3 points here?
Yeah, I think offensively, the defenders we need to look at tomorrow, because another key stat that we should note here as well is that we've got the most shots on target. The most shots of any Championship side this season, but Newcastle apparently have got the most shots on target. So that's an interesting stat there. So again, if we were able to convert a lot more of our shots into goals, we'd certainly be a lot higher than seventh place. So defensively, we need to be very, very sound. We don't want all this back passing to David Button, who then may feel a little bit nervous, give the ball away. So I'm going to be looking at the defenders tomorrow because, you know, these guys, Newcastle United, got the most shots on target and they've scored the most goals in the division. You know, we can't afford to slip up at any point because they're more clinical than we are, and that might be the difference tomorrow. So I think if we continue to pass as we normally do, get Kenny involved in the game. I'd like to see Chris Martin more involved. In his defence, he probably didn't get enough service on Tuesday night against Leeds. And that's, I'd like to address that point tomorrow against Newcastle, because we've got to test their keeper. We've got to make these shots that we create for ourselves more need to be on target. We need to be more clinical. And that's the reason why we're seventh, not top six. So let's test the keeper more, because I don't rate their defence. I think their defence, you know, it could be, not necessarily a top of the table Championship defence, but their forward lineup is, and that's the reason why they're leading the table, albeit Brighton are beating Derby 3-0 as we speak.
I saw that.
My view is defensively, you know, let's focus on that, but continue to play our normal passing game, but any half chance we get, we've got to be clinical, and because Newcastle, any half chance they'll get, guaranteed they'll score.
Interesting. Mike, I want to get your thoughts on what Emilio just shared, because while he was saying this, I was thinking of the Aston Villa away match Is that something that would concern you? You know, that situation that led to their goal? Because Emilio's talking about the defense. They can't afford to have that kind of situation against Newcastle United, St. James's Park.
Well, I mean, if I'm an opposing manager and I'm looking to play against Fulham, then I'm looking to have a fairly pacey man up front. I'm willing to let Fulham have the ball, and then as soon as our defenders have it, you launch it through the middle of our two centre-backs. And that's how you score against us. That's the way I think. And that's, you know, with Gale there, he's going to be the most potent person to, be in those kind of situations. So the defence is key tomorrow, absolutely. And we're going to need another Ream Callis, good performance. And it's also going to need Fredericks to be on it. And, you know, with Richie playing, the left-back position, you know, becomes more and more important. And, so it's a big decision tomorrow, you know, 16-year-old lad in front of 50-odd thousand fans or, a steady Eddie Malone. But, it's a tough call. I mean, although I don't think Session is fazed by absolutely anything. So I wouldn't be surprised to see him start tomorrow. So, yeah, the defence, we're not talking about the lineup yet, but
no, we're just about to get there.
I wouldn't expect many changes, but you know, here's a game. If he's going up there to try and get a point at least, then you could see a few little changes here and there.
Okay, interesting. Let's get right into the lineup, Mike. You know, I want your decision here. You know, starting 11, we're talking about left back. I agree with you. I think that's a key position. What do you do? You're Savica. What's your starting 11? Then I'll go to Amelia.
Well, as long as they've all come through and they've all recovered from Tuesday and they do all these tests now to see whether they've got red line fitness, all that kind of stuff, I would go with Session on because Malone's form has dipped. And I think it will be tough, but I wouldn't see any other changes. I think that's the team he's going to put out. But I do think if he were there, you know, it's possibly an ideal game for Parker, for example. It depends on how we feel we're going to deal with Gale. If we're just going to go the way we are and play our own game and try and make sure, you know, that's how we think we're going to get the best result, then that we'll play the way we are. We will make one change, that'd be at left back. If he wants to nullify Gale, then don't be shocked to see Parker come in. Possibly for McDonald, just to change it at the back there, or maybe even play both of them and move things around. This is it. But you know, there's lots of options. But sometimes
I was afraid you were going to say that. I was afraid you were going to say Parker McDonald. But Mike, yeah, you might know, be right there. But that might be a strategy.
Well, I mean, he hasn't done it though, has he, this season?
No.
So I doubt he's going to change it tomorrow. But it is the one game you sort of think, do I play three at the back? Do I bring in two defensive midfielders and swap it all around? We're on a great run. We're playing with a system. And, Martin, maybe he's watching his parent club get stuck tonight. And he's going to come out tomorrow and produce the goods. Let's hope so. So he's a key player tomorrow as well because it could be a game where we only get a few chances and their defence isn't great, even if they are on top. And so if Martin can find some space, he can certainly finish. We all know that.
Okay. Emilio, over to you. Your thoughts on what Mike shared on the starting 11. Would you do anything different? Would you do something dramatic, you know? Or would you just put out the team that you normally would, play the way that you normally play? Would you change things? Would you play with two defensive midfielders against this team because you're afraid of players like Dwight Gale?
Yeah, I don't think we're going to see anything different there, to be honest. I do think Sessegnon will start tomorrow. I agree with Mike. Not sure potentially if Fredericks or Doyle swap, potentially. The only reason why I say that, Fredericks, was a little bit you know, subdued on Tuesday night. You know, maybe again, defensively though, he has been outstanding in recent games. You know, I will put my hand up there and say he's been in good form. But you know, potentially a bit of a subtle change there in defence. But I don't know. I don't think he's got many other options really. It's, you know, we haven't really got. He doesn't want to play a different system up front. We're not going to see, you know, Cyriac up there with Martin. And I don't think he's got many other options, really. So I honestly think we're going to see Sessegnon being replaced, and then he's going to play the same lineup. I honestly can't see what else he could do. Could Aluko maybe be rested? But who would you put in his place? You know, it's. I don't think we've got enough of a depth in squad to be able to be creative and change it, mate. If the change is really going to be like for like, as opposed to system type of change, if you see my point, tactical changes. And
yeah.
You know, I think, you know, we are somewhat limited given the lack of depth in the squad. It's going to be like for like changes. So unless there's any injuries, I only see Sessegnon and potentially maybe Odoi coming in for Fredericks, question mark. But I think McDonald will start tomorrow. And, you know, could Aluko be rested? But then again, who would you put in his place? You know, it's, so we haven't got many options. Maybe George Williams on the bench, maybe. Maybe there's an opportunity for him to be given a chance to come on and maybe slightly be a little bit different, but he didn't do that against Leeds United. Why would he do that tomorrow away to Newcastle? So I doubt we'll see much change there, to be honest, unless it's enforced.
Okay, interesting take by both of you on the starting 11. Let's go to predictions. Before I get yours, I'm going to go to the Cutters Talk Twitter poll I did. I had 178 votes. Fulham win, 42%. Newcastle United win, 25%. Draw, 33%. Now I'm going to share some predictions on the Cutters Talk Facebook page. I've got a ton, but we're just running out of time here. Let's go with Andy Blythe, 2-2. Roger Lewis, I can never bring myself to predict the loss, so it's 2-2 for me. Dan Pantone, I'm going 2-1 to us. Paul Stutley, 1-1. Chris Gould, I'm going 1-1. Gags Owen, 1-0. Newcastle chasing shadow, so he's going for a Fulham victory. Andy Newland, 3-1 to Fulham. Alf Russell, 4-1 to the Super Whites. Let's see what else we got. One more. Mark Anthony Cutler, 3-1 to us. All right, guys, it's time for your predictions. Emilio, I'll start with you. What's your prediction for this match tomorrow?
I'm going to stick with my original. 1-1 is probably the most predictable scoreline, you know, but, you know, I'm actually going to stick my neck out and go for a 0-0 draw. You know, it could be 4-3, 3-3, but, you know, who's to say we can't nullify the situation? Keeping a clean sheet's important. I think we touched on it briefly earlier. I'd like to see a clean sheet, whether we can do it tomorrow or not. I'm going to go for a 0-0. Now, what are the odds of that happening tomorrow? Be a little bit unpredictable here.
Okay, Emilio being unpredictable. Okay, Mike, it's over to you. You and I have talked a little bit about that going into this match. I penciled this as being a difficult match. What's your prediction?
Yeah, my heart is saying a 1-1 draw. I certainly think we will concede. But then my head is saying a 3-1 defeat. But I'm hoping for a 1-1. I'll be happy with a 1-1. Anything. What I don't want, and no one wants, is a heavy defeat. You know, we've got a good goal difference. That may come into things. Tomorrow is almost like a free pass. In some ways, we've all agreed that it's going to be tough to get a result, and anything we get from it will be great. But, you know, damage limitation as well. You don't want to come away from a 4-0 defeat with a much more important game in my eyes is Tuesday. So
it's Blackburn.
You know, yeah. So yeah, if we can get a 1-1, I'll be more than happy.
I'm there with you, Mike. I predicted on this other podcast 2-2, so I'm going to share that as well, 2-2. I think we're going to score a couple goals. I think they're going to score a couple goals. The host of that other podcast actually predicted 3-1 like you for Newcastle United. I understand that. The only reason of what I did tell him, though, is that there's been only one match this season that we've lost by more than one goal, and that was the Bristol City match. But this is Newcastle United. I can definitely see why the prediction from you and him is 3-1. But let's hope that that we're wrong. You know, I hope I'm right. 2-2, I'll take 2-2 draw. I'll even take a 0-0 from Emilio, which would be a scary 0-0. But I'll take that as well, Emilio. All right. All right, great show, guys. You guys were fantastic tonight. But we definitely need to wrap this up. Final thoughts from you, Emilio, before we go.
Yeah, good show. Good reflection on the Tuesday night victory. Oh, it's felt like a victory anyway. But, you know, it's let's go into tomorrow's game with that confidence. But Mike's point is valid. You know, Tuesday night's game is the game that we can't afford not to win. So let's maybe that might play a part in tomorrow's lineup. You know, has he got Tuesday night's game in mind? So he might potentially subtly make some capital tactical substitutions, maybe the Parker for McDonald and keep McDonald fresh for Tuesday night. So just throwing it out there, you know, just reflecting on that, because we have got a crucial game on Tuesday night. And, you know, but let's see. Tomorrow will be a good game. I've enjoyed the show, and hopefully our fans around the world and listeners around the world will have enjoyed it too. So thanks for having us on again, Russ.
Oh, thank you, Emilio. You were fantastic tonight. Mike, over to you. Your final thoughts before we go.
Similar to what I said just a few minutes ago, which is tomorrow's a game which, if we can get something from it, it'd be great. But if we lose, again, what Emilio said is, you know, don't panic. You know, at some stage over these 11 games, we're going to lose two or three, aren't we? So, you know, and tomorrow might be one of them, but we'll still be involved. The one thing we are all hoping for is, please, Wednesday or Reading, or, you know, someone's got to slip up sooner or later.
I agree.
You know, so if we slip up, let them slip up, and we make it up on Tuesday.
But, that's right. We still have that game in hand.
We've got a lot of fans up there tomorrow, and they're going to be shouting down from the rooftops. And at Newcastle, it literally is shouting down from the rooftops. And, you know, hopefully they... the team can produce something so they can all go home happy.
Okay, great stuff from the two of you. Great final thoughts. My final thoughts actually involve a conversation I had last night. A Fulham supporter was over here on business, and I met him for dinner. And it was 2 hours of just talking about Fulham. So thank you, David Swery, for meeting me last night. And it was fantastic. We just talked about Fulham. I don't get a chance to do that often over here. So it was nice just to talk Fulham for 2 hours, have a great meal. So thank you, David. That's my final thought. All right, guys, it is time to wrap up the show. From Mike Gregg and Emilio Deneau, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you, as always, for listening to Cottage Talk.